For ID the Future, I'm David Klinghoffer. This year, radio host and commentator Michael Medved has done outstanding coverage of intelligent design, the Darwin controversy, and the use and abuse of science, offering his 3 to 4 million listeners up-to-the-minute news and analysis with an exciting focus on contested questions in the study of evolution. At the Center for Science and Culture, we concluded our broadcasting year with a rich and enjoyable special edition of the Science and Culture Update on the Medved Show, live from the Seattle offices of Discovery Institute. The focus of the hour was the persecution of scientists and scholars who challenged Darwinian evolution. Mr. Medved talked with 3 fascinating guests.
I'm broadcasting today from Discovery Institute, which more than any other institution in the world has been identified with the serious and scientific posing of questions of design in the natural world. And I'm speaking with 3 distinguished scientists who, each in his own way, 2 in very particular ways, have paid something of a price for going into areas that are considered don't go there, or there may be career consequences.
Richard Sternberg and Douglas Axe, scientists associated with Discovery Institute, shared their stories of having been persecuted for failing to toe the line in support of Darwinian orthodoxy.
Dr. Sternberg, you served at one of the most prestigious institutions in the country, which of course is the Smithsonian Institution. You're an evolutionary biologist. You have 2 PhDs in biology related to evolutionary research. You were a research collaborator at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of Natural History. Where did you run into career difficulty exactly at the Smithsonian?
Well, I crossed paths with Steve Meyer, so to speak, when he submitted an article to the journal that I was the chief editor of, Proceedings of the Biological Society of Washington. He submitted the paper in 2003, and during that time, there was within the museum and outside the museum, other places like the NIH, there was discussion about intelligent design, about Michael Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box. And so I was not an ID theorist or ID supporter, but nevertheless, I considered the paper. I found it interesting, and I thought it'd be of interest to readers. I allowed it to go through peer review, and much to my surprise, it was critically peer reviewed. And after careful deliberation, I decided to publish the article. And the article appeared late 2004 without much fanfare. And about a month later, the evolutionary biology hit the fan.
What exactly was the nature of Sternberg's crime?
So what you have done is your entire crime, such as it was to go ahead and take this peer-reviewed article and to publish it. Now, Smithsonian Institution, and I don't know if the particular – you were publishing the Proceedings of the Biological Society of Washington.
Correct.
Very prestigious. Smithsonian gets a great deal of governmental support, does it not?
Yes.
I mean, most of the budget is paid for by the taxpayer.
Indeed.
Okay. So you're working for this taxpayer-supported institution, and you publish an article based upon your best academic and scientific judgment is worthy at least of consideration. Describe the nature of cleaning off the fan after the the evolutionary biology hit the fan.
Well, I'm not sure it was clean after I made many attempts to clean it off. What happened? Again, the article appeared September 2004. There were people within the museum who read the article. Of course, some people found it of interest. It was about a month or so later when several outside groups began to complain quite loud about the article, and when the director of research in the Natural History Museum complained that there would be no funding to be given to anyone who was supportive of what he considered to be creationism, and because he was conflating it or confusing it.
But now, when he was cracking down on someone supportive of creationism, was he talking about Steve Meyer or you?
He was speaking really about me for having allowed this article to appear in print. I was the gatekeeper. And by allowing this this article to appear, you know, it was considered.
You didn't have any editor's comment saying that this is worthy of attention or I think this is important. You just printed it, right? I mean.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it went through a peer review process. And you also have to keep in mind that at that time, 2003, 2004, you had a number of articles appearing in such journals as Gene, for example, and they were making cases against intelligent design. They were even making cases for atheism based on evolutionary genetics. So when he submitted his article, I thought it was timely in the sense that it would provide a counterpoint to these other articles that were appearing that were anti-ID and possibly lead to a civil discussion within the context of the peer-reviewed literature.
Dr. Sternberg expected a civil discussion, but what ensued was anything but that.
What happened? Well, I was thrown out of my office. I was denied access to specimens. I was informed that should anything go missing, should anything be broken, should anything happen in the Natural History Museum, I was going to be blamed for it. And then colleagues of mine, I was still trying to maintain research. And please, to be fair, there were a comparatively small number of people who were hostile to me. Most of the people in the museum either didn't care or they were neutral. So I was trying to carry on research, but it became clear that that was not going to happen. The individual who was my superior and who was friendly to me was replaced, and I was put under an individual who was hostile to me. And I was...
Bureaucrat.
Was there some demand that you apologize? What did they want from you? I mean, other than to go away.
What they wanted to find was something that I had done wrong. They wanted to find some rationale they could use to not just have me leave, but to have me leave under a very dark cloud, to have it appear that the publication process before, during, and after was wrong, and for me to basically admit to some form of thought crime, some form of active intellectual terrorism.
Thought crimes at the Smithsonian.
Michael Medved asked Dr. Meyer what he imagined could have been going through the minds of Dr. Sternberg's Smithsonian colleagues.
What do you think that some of Dr. Sternberg's persecutors would say if I were to ask him, why did you give Rick Sternberg such a tough time? What would they say?
Well, they thought it was legitimate because they thought that the theory of intelligent design is not a scientific theory. And oddly, one of the reasons that at that time people were claiming that intelligent design isn't a scientific theory is that it had no peer-reviewed publications in support of it. So it got a little circular.
Once the dam bursts and there starts to be peer-reviewed publications, let alone in the publication of the Smithsonian Institution, then who knows what's next? Maybe actually honest debate?
Mr. Medved then turned to Douglas Axe, director of Biologic Institute.
Okay, let's go to Douglas Axe. Douglas, I mean, obviously a PhD from Caltech and all of your incredibly distinguished academic credentials. How could you possibly get in trouble? How would that happen?
Well, I actually got in trouble before Rick did, about 2 years before Rick did, but it was not in the United States. I was in the UK at the time in Cambridge, and unlike Rick's situation, in my situation, all the dots have not been connected and I've not been able to connect them in the 11 years since. So I won't try to do that here. But the short story is very suddenly, and this was as I was working on a project that became a paper that came out in 2004 that Steve cited in the paper that came out in the journal that Rick was editor of, if you can follow all that. As I was on that project, a newspaper article came out naming me and my affiliation in New York. And the following day, I got an email mysteriously saying, we need you to leave.
Your affiliation?
Medical Research Council Center, Cambridge. So that is the...
It identified him as an ID proponent.
Stephen Meyer sketched the larger picture of the positive case for design in Nature, both in cosmology and biology. Prompted by a listener's call, Dr. Meyer addressed the enigma of cosmic fine-tuning.
And this is where I think a lot of physicists are very intrigued with the notion of intelligent design. The strength of gravitational force, the expansion rate of the universe, the speed of light, many, many parameters have a kind of Goldilocks just right quality, not too strong, not too weak, not too hot, not too cold, not too fast, not too slow, that allows for life to exist in the universe. And it's, I think, that fine-tuning of those physical parameters is what I think is the locus of evidence of design.
This is what we talked about last week, Steve. It allows life to exist on Earth. Life in the universe outside of Earth,
right.
we don't know about yet.
Well, the Earth presents another set of fine-tuning parameters. The Earth is just the right distance from the sun, has just the right axial tilt, et cetera, et cetera. So there are scores of parameters that have to be just exactly as they are to allow for the possibility of life. And in the biological realm, we think that there's even more input of information necessary to actually build living organisms, but just creating a stable platform for life requires a huge amount of design, what engineers would think of in terms of engineering constraints on the natural world.
Michael was gracious and eloquent in explaining the work we do at the Center for Science and Culture. He told a story about Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson that is relevant and worth repeating.
My reference earlier to Thoreau is there's a famous anecdote, and I think it has the great virtue of actually having been true, or at least it was recorded this way by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Thoreau went to jail, famously, because he refused to pay his war tax to support the Mexican War. He opposed the Mexican War. He thought it was immoral. He thought it would advance slavery. He was against it. So he went to the local jail in Concord, Massachusetts, and his friend came over in top hat, Ralph Waldo Emerson. These are two very famous intellectuals at the time. And Emerson comes and sees him, and he's actually literally behind bars. And he says, "David, what are you doing in there?" And Thoreau looks up at him, and he says, "Waldo, what are you doing out there?" In other words, the obligation would be to actually take a position of conscience.
The application in the context of the intelligent design controversy, said Michael, is evident. As you can imagine, he has received challenges on his association with ID. Many, of course, come from people who don't know what ID theorists actually say. Scientists, including Dr. Sternberg and Dr. Axe, have not only been challenged but forced out of enviable positions in academic life, Cambridge and the Smithsonian, over the Darwin issue. When criticized for his support for persecuted ID scientists, "Why are you there?" Medved's answer is Thoreau's, "Why are you not here?" Interestingly, in the second hour of the show, just before the Science and Culture update, Michael talked about the non-human rights madness that would, among other things, recognize chimps and dolphins as non-human persons. The confusion about the nature of a person, including the chilling notion of human non-persons, is among the legacies of Darwinist materialism. Our Discovery colleague Wesley Smith wrote about that recently in the Weekly Standard. "We are here," Meyer, Sternberg, Axe, Smith, and other Discovery staff, fellows, and associates, "because of the power of the scientific argument for purpose in nature, and because denying design leads so predictably to lunacies like non-human rights. But we're also here thanks to wonderfully generous support from listeners to the ID the Future podcast and other friends of Discovery Institute. Please join us in our important work. We need you." This is David Klinghoffer for ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.